Okay, now we are going on to questions that you generated from the audience. So the first one is, what is your definition of economic development, and what is the City Commission's role in keeping our community economically viable? I can repeat that. What is your definition of economic development, and what is the City Commission's role in keeping our community economically viable? Aaron.
I get the benefit of going first, and everyone's going to pick apart my definition. So I agree with everything they say, too. No. Economic development is a tricky word, and what it boils down to is we have, I think, the economic development tax that was passed is sunsetting in the near future. And so we'll be asked to define this again as a community. What do we want? Do we want to invest as economic development? And what do we want economic development to mean? In the very general sense, it should mean jobs, and it should mean generating revenue into our community. My heart is in not necessarily looking to the outside to generate economic development. I think we have the talent, we have the tools, we've had a long period of growth, and we need to look at ways we can invest and shore up what we have here. I kind of think and joke that this is, in my mind, when like my 9-year-old daughter asking if she can have friends over, because we want cool people to come, but she hasn't cleaned her room. And so I tell her, clean your room, and I think we need to clean our city and make sure that we shore up our, in the next decade, we can be one of the best places to be in the entire Midwest. We can be a Silicon Prairie. We're not ready for that. We have to take care of those things today.
Thank you, Aaron. Mark Hattisall.
I think of economic development as creating an environment where business can grow, which means more jobs, better paying jobs, and a better economic output for everybody. One of the things that we have to be able to make it easier to get into business and to stay into business in Manhattan. I keep harping about the regulations and the code service issues that they've got all the time. All of those things drive up the cost of business, which means there's less profit for paying wages. And so we have to really be careful as we start trying to make everything neater and niftier in Manhattan that we don't have the unintended consequence of driving up the price of everything, price for people to live here, the price of business to do business here. I think the city's responsibility is we got to be able to keep some money or have some money on hand for potential new employers or if some local employer wants to expand, and especially for things like some kind of an infrastructure improvement. That's one of the things that we never would not probably have budgeted. But if they need a rail spur or a four-lane highway that goes half a mile or something, those might be the kind of things that we'd be nice to have some economic development money sitting there waiting for some kind of a use instead of saying, oh, we can't afford that, and now you're out of business.
Okay, Caleb James.
For me, when it comes to economic development funds for the city, they need to do three things. Number one, it needs to help pay down the city debt so that we can get out from under that and stop having to raise taxes to get additional funds. Number two, it needs to entice businesses to create jobs that, number one, pay well, and number two, have benefits. It's one thing to make $15 an hour if you have benefits and it doesn't come out of that $15. It is another thing entirely to have to take your benefits out of that $15 an hour. So we need to be very introspective when we look at where we use economic development funds when it comes to bringing in businesses. The third thing is to increase the quality of life of the residents that are here. We want to bring in businesses, not necessarily the workforce. The workforce is here. We have workforce producers in MATC and Kansas State University. We can produce a workforce. We have to produce a city that workforce wants to live in. So when we look at funding quality of life projects, we need to look at, are we making our communities healthier? Is there more things for them to do to get outside? When we talk about, for me, one of my topics is the Douglas Center. When we're talking about that area and that community, where else are they going to go if they don't have the Attabus to get downtown or go to another location? Where are they going to work out? I talk to a lot of the high school kids. I don't just talk to voters. They say they want to go down there and play basketball, but they say, the place is falling apart. City doesn't care, and that's their mindset when they're growing. The city doesn't care. We need to use economic development funds to do that thing. And actually, a commissioner recommended using economic development funds to build the Douglas Center, and it was shot down. Thank you.
Thank you, Caleb. Linda Morris.
With regard to the definition of economic development, I agree that it is creating an environment for businesses to grow and create better jobs and better pay for jobs. We have one experience with call centers, and that didn't work out so well. We're kind of glad when they left. The city currently contracts with the Chamber of Commerce to vet the applications for economic development that we receive. I think that's a good idea. And I say that because the city does not have the expertise to do that. There's not one staff member that could do that totally. Plus, after a private company gives their financial information to the city, it's available to the public through a Freedom of Information Act. No company is going to do that. We have a fine line we have to walk, and commissioners, staff, administration are not experts in that area. I'm not a big advocate of paying down debt. I think economic development needs to be used for future thinking things and not for looking back, and that's paying debt down. So it's just a philosophy. We don't have that much money, but when I look at how much money Topeka has, they make $20 million offers to companies to come in. We aren't in their league.
Thank you, Linda. Maureen Shahan.
Economic development, I think they've done a pretty good job of defining it, finding ways to enhance the city, the number of jobs, the availability of jobs, the number of jobs that are well-paying. If we're going to give money to a business to come here, we need to ensure that that business is going to bring jobs, that every one of those provides, every single job provides enough money that a person can live a dignified life. We can't, the city, the Chamber of Commerce came and asked for more money, and they said if we gave them more money, they would bring in 500 jobs, $40,000 a year jobs over the next 5 years. My question to them would be, how many additional jobs would be minimum wage part-time jobs that put a drain on the rest of the system? It's not necessarily that we need more jobs, but we need to find ways to increase the pay for the jobs that we have so that people can live a dignified life doing the work that they're doing.
Thank you. Mary Renee Shirk.
Economic development funds are money that you and I pay through a tax that we have that expires in 2 years, and so it's our money. And I believe economic development is about, like folks have said, about growing business here. I would like to make sure that we're spending as much supporting and helping the businesses that are already here as we are spending money trying to recruit people from out of town. I feel like a lot of our shift has been towards let's recruit. And we have some great employers here in town who do, in fact, pay a living wage and provide health care. And I think that's important. I do feel like any money the city invests needs to be literally concrete. It should be infrastructure. It should be solid things that if that business fails, we can still use for other businesses. Also, a large part of it is I would like the city to look back at some of our failures, like the call center, and let's make sure we've learned from those as we go forward to spend that money. I'm a big supporter in making sure, like lots of folks have said, that businesses we bring in pay enough and provide health care. Why would we bring in a business that's then going to cost us more in a different area of the town? And one of my big pet peeves is we built all of those, I call it heart attack lane, the street that's fast food lane that has all those fast foods, when we built all those stores, and there's no sidewalks for those workers to get there. And we wonder why we can't get workers. So making sure we're providing for workers not only by providing a wage, but making sure they can get there, and making sure we have the childcare available to do that. Does this business bring work and life to all of us, and is it worth our money?
Thank you, Mary Renee. Sarah Siders.
I think most of us have realized that economic development can be defined as whatever I want it to mean, whatever you want it to mean, and therefore we've spent that money from that sales tax on many different kinds of things, and it does depend on philosophy. I believe that it's less about what economic development is and more about what it should do. I think it should promote prosperity, opportunity, and sustainability in a community, and I think that that is done through making it easier to live, work, and play in Manhattan, both for our current and for our future residents. So that looks like supporting and promoting not only entrepreneurship, those who are here in the community that might have a business idea, those coming in from the outside who might want to, bring their business here, but also supporting the business community here in Manhattan. I've been a part of 1 Million Cups. It's been really neat to be a part of that community and the network of people who are wanting to make business great here. Initiatives like Startup MHK are great examples of promoting business and entrepreneurship, but I think it's also about attracting our workforce and making sure that we're doing what it takes to make it easier, again, to live here through everything from improved multimodal transportation. I need to be able to walk or bike or use public transportation here. And I think all of those things, when we use our money for that, that also reflects a focus on economic development here.
Thank you, Sarah. Vincent Tracy.
Economic development shouldn't only be about bringing in new businesses. It should be used to promote those businesses that are already here, to help them to expand if at all possible, and to help them to be able to provide the benefits their workers need in order to stay here. If we're not providing those benefits as part of their pay, we're not developing a good economic background to keep Manhattan viable. I have no other comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Vincent. Okay, we have a multi-part question, but it's all on one topic. What is your position on the proposed sales tax increase, and what other forms of revenue raising would you consider besides sales tax, especially to support our infrastructure and social services?
Are you sure this person isn't running for commission? The sales tax question is a favorite for people to ask me, and unfortunately, I have almost no power over if it passes or doesn't. What I do have power over is how I will work for you, and I see our commission, our school board, any nonpartisan board as somebody that is the employee of the voters, that you are the boss. If you decide we don't want this sales tax, it's my job to figure out how we do things to make it work within those parameters. And I think I've heard we don't want to increase property taxes. So if we don't, that means a really not fun job for me as your commissioner to figure out where we find funding to pay for those important safety projects that we talked about earlier, including the levy, because that could be cuts to services, it could be cuts to other things. The other part of the question is, how do we shore up in other ways to tax? That could be, we've in the past talked about the transient tax, the guest tax. There's ways to identify smaller sections of people that may be able to pay as they move through our community, but really that is also the sales tax being pitched to us currently. So I myself think that it makes my life easier a little bit as a commissioner if the sales tax passes, because we have ways to fund these projects that are important to the community, but I'm not running to make my life easier either, so I will work for you and work within those parameters as the community decides.
Okay, thank you, Aaron. Mark Hattisall.
Well, the question becomes, do you want to get socked every time you buy something at Dillon's, or would you rather get socked twice a year on your property taxes? And so it's going to be an issue for people to decide. I would really like, part of the sales tax issue is over 30 years we'll be able to generate the amount of money it costs to do these six projects. So my question is, are we going to sort of pay as we go and start with the highest priority ones, which apparently are the airport and the levee. And does that mean we got to wait 20 or 25 years for the Douglas Center to for that cash to be freed up for that? Or are we going to borrow a pile of money and use the 0.3% sales tax to pay it back? I would really like for this to have had like a 10 or some period of time sunset, do the most important, what they think are the most important projects, the levee and the airport, and then figure out where we can find some other money, some more federal grants, some more paying down some other debt so we could free up some other money to start on some of these other projects, because that's it just seems like if it's a 30-year plan, we can't wait 30 years for all these projects if they're that important today. And so I'd like us to make it a 10-year thing, and then in 10 more years, if the voters are satisfied that we've made progress on the list, then we could renew it again. But just this eternity tax increase is just a little hard to swallow, but it would make budgeting easier. But like you said, we'll leave that for Bernie to make it easier.
Okay, thank you. Caleb James.
Yes, yeah, so my issues with the sales tax increase, first and foremost, it's infinite. They just asked you to let them raise your tax forever. Then the second thing is, the commission didn't put any attachment on there. The city didn't put any attachment on there. The next commission can get in there and spend that money on whatever they want, because there is no guarantee that this money is going to be spent on these six things. It's just saying, we could pay for these six if you pass it. If you look at my card, my material I have over there, one of the things on there is accountability. The only reason I would be against this is because there's no accountability tied to it. How do we hold people accountable for something they never said they would do? Just something they said they could do if they wanted to. That's the main issue I have with this. Secondly, we need to look at holding the city staff accountable. Two commissioners, to their credit, Jared McKee and Wynn Butler, said to the city, give us a version of the budget where the property taxes do not increase. They asked for this three times. Zero times did the city staff give them that budget, and they both voted against it, and rightfully so. If the commission isn't holding the city staff accountable for your tax dollars, who's going to? And now they're asking for more taxes. Are you going to elect people who hold them accountable, or are you going to vote for the sales tax and then vote the same thing back in? Thank you.
Thank you, Caleb. Linda Morse.
I do support, as a commissioner, I voted to send this to the electorate at the upcoming election, because it's a big bite to chew. But when you consider that 0.3 sales tax, 0.3 cents, tenths of a cent, is pretty marginal. And when I look at all of the cities in the state, Manhattan is right in the middle with the amount of sales tax that we charge. That means we're not being extreme. We're middle of the road, and that's where we need to be for me to be comfortable. I think that these projects are essential. We have to do this levee. We have to do this airport runway. There, and I'm committed to doing the Douglas Center. My lowest priority is the maintenance building. That's $1 million. But there are other things that get slipped into our budget, too, and I can talk about that. But I'm not interested in putting it on property taxes. I would rather have it in this sales tax. But there are other opportunities, like internet sales tax and pressuring our legislators, delinquent property taxes, working with people to get them paid so the money is available and not out in the middle of nowhere. Dark store theory, where corporations keep their own money and get it back. Those are kind of unreasonable.
Thank you, Linda. Maureen Shahan.
I am not a big proponent of the sales tax increase, primarily because it's a regressive tax. It impacts the people with the least the most. The people who don't have a dollar to save at the end of the month aren't going to have more stuff at the end of the month. They're going to pay the same amount of money and end up with less groceries at the end of the month. So that's the primary reason that I don't really support it. On the other hand, we have things that need to be done, that need to be fixed. The levy we've already committed to. So we have to fund it. The airport needs to be done it's not a huge amount of money, but we do need to have the money to do that. If I agree with Caleb that the sales tax increase does not have anything directly tied to it. It's like, here's some stuff that we want to do, and you should pay us. So we need to set a process, a clear process, for deciding what gets done and what the priority of it is. I heard a comment in one of the sales in one of the commission meetings, if the sales tax increase doesn't pass, we will have to look critically about how we proceed with this project. How about we look critically at how we proceed with each of the projects, regardless of whether the sales tax passes or not?
Okay, thank you, Maureen. Mary Renee Shirk.
I'm kind of going to roll right off of that and say, if these are projects we have to do and we knew they were coming, why weren't we saving for them? I'm voting no on the sales tax, and I actually use the airport all the time. I'm voting no, and I'm actually in a neighborhood that would benefit from the Douglas Community Center. I'm voting no, and I live five blocks from Aggieville and do a lot of my living in Aggieville. And I'm voting no until the commission can commit to projects and until they can tell me they're planning on how to replace the runway the next time their runway needs to be replaced. I'm tired of feeling like we commit to projects, and then I feel like as a taxpayer, I'm told, now we must pay for them. And I ask, where is the planning for the next time? I've lived here 25 years, and so I've constantly seen people put things off and put things off with the, oh, we'll get a tax, we'll pay for that later. And we're tired of that. While we, within the city, in the know the city's sales tax is just this percent, all of us have seen our property tax go up because of the schools and because of the county. We've also seen issues with the state. And so for all of us, it's all coming out of our pockets. And a lot of us, and again, this goes back to representation, feel like we weren't asked about these projects, that these projects weren't planned for, and more importantly for me, that there's not a plan to prevent us from having this in the future. But maybe it does take 9% sales tax for us to have the city that we want to have in the future. But I think that's a discussion we didn't have. Instead, we found some projects, we cobbled them all together, and said, surely the city will pay for them.
Thank you, Mary Renee. Sarah Siders.
Would you mind repeating the question so I can make sure I'm answering it properly?
Yes. The question is, what is your position on the proposed sales tax increase? And what other forms of revenue raising would you consider besides sales tax, especially to support our infrastructure and social services?
Okay. So the sales tax, like everyone else, I feel, you know, somewhat conflicted about it. There's obviously these obvious negatives to it, that it is a regressive tax that negatively affects people with lower income. It's a no sunset tax, so it's sort of infinite. And again, as people have mentioned, the projects aren't earmarked, and so the commission is not necessarily committed to completing those. And so those would be some of the negatives. And ultimately, I'm not deciding this. So we're all going to go into the voting booth on November 5th and make the decision at the exact same time. But I'm sort of letting you in on my inner workings here, thinking about the pros and cons. I think for the pros of the sales tax, specifically funding these infrastructure and safety improvements, we're partnering with federal dollars for the levy and for the airport, and I think that's an important commitment that we need to follow through on. And you can see how each of these projects would be important or even catalytic, like the parking garage that's going to open up room for development and live, work, and play space in Aggieville. I think a lot of those things are important and could, as Mary Renee said, help us create the city that we want to live in. But I think that it's important for us as city members and voters to hold ourselves and the city commission accountable for the choices that we make with this money.
Thank you, Sarah. Vincent Tracy.
As I've said previously, I don't like the way the sales tax initiative was worded. It doesn't stop. And it does, as everybody says, impact those people who have the least amount of spare money to be able to do things. But I've also taken a stand that I don't want to raise property taxes. It's been said by two commissioners that even if the sales tax initiative passes, there's a possibility that they would want to raise the mill levy by six more. too much taxes. We've got to have a commission that's willing to say, stop. We've committed to this. We've got to find the funds to pay for it. We need to take care of those safety issues. And if I get elected to the commission, one of the first things I'm going to ask the rest of the commission in the city to do is go to the legislature and say, hey, let's modify your taxes so that people don't have to pay tax on food. And that way, they'll have more money out of the limited funds they get, not having to choose, do I pay this pay period for rent and utilities, or do I buy food for my family? Thank you.
Thank you, Vincent. Next question. Please describe how you would work with the Riley County Police Department to improve public safety.
Awesome. Wow. So, I really enjoy the new director. I think he has a vision that I think aligns with mine, where I would hope we get to. It's not going to be easy to get there. I know in talking to him that the diversity of the police force is important to him, and I love to hear that. We have patrolmen that I think around the numbers of 105 or 110 patrol officers, and 99 of them are white. So that, and white males. So there's, or maybe just white, sorry, I shouldn't say, but which gender. But the issues that we have as a community is that, as Caleb mentioned, people are feeling left out, they're feeling not representative, they're feeling profiled in some circumstances, and maybe that's true, maybe it's not, but what we can do as a city is promote that vision and work with our director to make that happen. Make it a reality. The way that they're working with mental health is a model of how they can be inclusive and have those crisis intervention teams, how they can have different, bring different people and different experts in to help those officers transition to be a more welcoming or more understanding force to serve everybody.
Thank you, Aaron. Mark Hattisall.
I was thinking several years ago that Captain Haggerty had come up with a plan to where they were focusing most of their police efforts in the areas of town where most of the crime was occurring, because apparently there's like 200 to 300 people are committing pretty much all of the crimes in Manhattan, and they're almost 75 or 80% of them are all drug driven, whether it's people breaking into cars to steal money for drugs, whether it's somebody killing somebody else because of a disagreement over money for drugs. And so the drug problem is the big driver of crime in our community, and we need to sit real hard on the people that are the repeat offenders. I was talking to a parole officer the other day, and she says that it's getting to be a joke. They don't have room in the jail, or they just send everybody out on bail, and then they put them on parole, and then they're constantly watching them, and then they're constantly getting into trouble. But the state's systems are overcrowded. Apparently, our local one can't hold many more. So it's a revolving door, and we're not ever fixing it. So how do we work with that to make it better? I don't know. We've got to start locking up the serious criminals. People, you can avoid most crime if you're not involved with criminals. If you're not a drug dealer, you're not hanging out with bad guys, there's a pretty good chance that you're not going to be the victim of a crime. And so I think with the drugs are the main problem, but we've got to focus on the few criminals that are out there that are causing most of the problem.
Thank you, Mark. Caleb James.
Yes, first and foremost, I think you have to let police officers do their jobs. I have a friend of mine. I'm not going to mention his name because I didn't ask him to be able to, but he was a soldier of mine when I was in the Army. He got out and stayed around here as well, and he's currently a member of the RCPD, and he's a great guy. And so, yes, I would like to see more diversity in the workforce, in the police force, but I would also like to see that cultural awareness happen. I would like to see more community engagement, and I think the commission's portion is to be able to be that hand that extends from the RCPD to the community and help be that buffer. There's an outdoor basketball court over by the Douglas Center, and I some kids were playing out there, and I went to join them. I said, man, you need to get some more friends out here so we can do 5-on-5. And they said, nah, man, if we get too many of us over here, the police be on our bumper. I said, what? They said, yeah, man, too many of us in the group, police gonna be here in about 10 minutes. That's where the city commission can help, to be that buffer, because I told them, look, a lot of good guys on the police force. I said, if you guys are out here having fun, there's no reason you should feel like the police are going to show up because you're in too big of a group. So when you're asking what the city commission can do to assist that, it's be the buffer, be the outreach from the community to the police force, and then also help enable the police to do their job and not have that stigma and perception in the community.
Thank you, Caleb. Linda Morris.
Since January, I've been serving on the Riley County Law Board. And that's been an educational piece for me so far, but it involves asking hard questions and looking at their budget critically, which is what we did this year. But I believe that the new director is changing things, the culture in the Riley County Police Department. At least I see that. I don't know that everyone does. I hope, and I think he's doing the right things internally by talking to the personnel. I don't think that if we behave reasonably, like locking our doors, locking our cars, I think we have a reasonably safe community here. I don't live in fear every day. I doubt that you do either. So we have to be reasonable about this also. With regard to diversity, I have seen since he has been here, he has promoted a woman to one of the higher level positions. Administrator, and he's improving the race numbers also. I'm encouraged by that. He sees it as a need. I know that he's begun a training program for police officers in how to better handle mental health issues in rest. I believe he is doing some things with community engagement. He's only been here since January, so I think there's more to be done.
Thank you, Linda. Maureen Shahan.
I agree. I think that the new director is doing a good job. How would I work with the RCPD? I am a member of the Equal Justice Alliance, and we've met with Director Butler. Every time I see him, he says, when are we having another meeting? So I think he really is engaged. And I think I saw on Facebook the other day they had a how for autistic people to come and meet with police and say, how do you behave when you're in a traffic stop? How do you behave when you're around the police? And how do the police behave with the autistic people? So they would actually know, maybe if you've never met an autistic person, you wouldn't understand how they behave that might be different than a standard person, you know? So that kind of outreach, I think, is really good, and I would do everything I could to encourage more things like that, maybe coffee with a cop, where you can get together on a Saturday morning and meet the officers that patrol your neighborhood, or, you know, anything like that. Anytime that we can have more interfacing with the police officers that is not crime-related, I think that's a good thing. Regarding crime in the neighborhood, I looked at the map of crime in Manhattan the other day, and basically there was larceny everywhere. It's not restricted to one part of town. It's all over the place. So they're dealing with a lot of issues, and I think they're doing a good job.
Thank you, Maureen. Mary Renee Shirk.
Could you repeat the questions?
Yes.
I make sure I answer the right question.
Please describe how you would work with the Riley County Police Department to improve public safety.
Those of us who've been involved with the Riley County Police Department before, in one way or another, be it pleasant or unpleasant, have our own feelings about the Riley County Police Department. One of the reasons I'm running, honestly, is because a friend of mine who was involved with the police in a way, in a domestic institute, she said, you know, I feel like no one up there has ever been in the back seat of a cop car before, and yet they're making decisions about the police. And so, again, I feel that citizen representation, getting people to talk about their experiences with the police and creating a safe space space for them to have those discussions, not just a person at the police department, but a city commissioner who can come and talk to those folks. There are racial discrepancies in our arrest records here in town. I can give you all those numbers if you'd like. So we do have some issues here. I have some friends who live in the county, and they also fund the RCPD, and they say, you know, I never see a cop. And I said, I live by Aggieville. Come on down to my neighborhood. We're hogging them all in a 2-block area down there. So I think there is some needed discussion to go on. I was very happy to meet with the LGBT liaison that they've created there to help other folks who may feel marginalized and let them feel like they have a safe space with RCPD. I think expanding the mental health and making sure that we're mental health supporting our police officers. Those folks see some bad stuff every day. Every day is someone else's worst day, and I think making sure we continue to support them is also really important.
Thank you, Mary Renee. Sarah Siders.
Yeah, I think RCPD is doing a great job, and I got to meet the new director as well and have been very impressed so far with his philosophies and initiatives. I think that ultimately when it comes to law enforcement, we want to take care of the people who are actually doing the work of law enforcement. I do know some people who are police officers, and they have such incredible jobs and take such risks and make sacrifices all the time, and I think that's very important. And with that being said, I think that there's also a sense of low trust within certain populations in our community between the law enforcement and minority populations or marginalized populations. And so many people along the forum here have already mentioned this, but we need to be having intentional conversations and creating safe places to humanize people, because why is someone using drugs, right? Even that idea. Sometimes we talk about criminals as if they're not people. And I think we need to remember that everyone is a person. And so we need to think about why is somebody doing something that seems so less than human? When we look at the bigger picture, we want to be thinking about how to promote holistic health, everything from affordable housing, expanding healthcare opportunities at the state level. We need to be addressing food insecurity in critical ways and just taking a look at the whole picture that contributes to crime in our community.
Thank you, Sarah. Vincent Tracy.
Well, first things first, I'm looking at this with a skewed perspective. I spent 20 years in law enforcement. I've seen a lot of other people's bad days. But what can we as the City Commission do to work with the Riley County PD? We have to work through the law board. We can't work directly with the police department. We can ask the director what problems is he having. We can have meetings with the officers and both correction and patrol and admin and see what issues they're having. Some of their issues we're not going to be able to address, but we might be able to come up with some ideas that the law board could take on to make it easier for some of their personnel. In talking with the Fraternal Order of Police, one of their issues is it doesn't matter where you're at, everybody gets the same pay increase, regardless of whether or not they're the ones out in the street having to deal with everybody else's bad days. Maybe we can get the law board to look at different items, but that's for a future commission.
Thank you, Vincent. Okay, the next and last question from the audience, and I'm going to ask the timers, we're going to make this a lightning round where you just get 1 minute to answer so we can stay on track time-wise. The question is, what do you feel the commission's role is in assuring necessary social services have the resources they need to effectively care for those they serve?
The City Commission's role is to be a listener, hear the concerns, and then make sure that the people, from my perspective, the people are being provided access to those resources so they can either get out of the situation they're in or climb the ladder to reach that American dream. I've worked as a case manager for homeless veterans. That's what I did when I got out of the military. I helped in identifying that we had a lack of resources pooling together in our community. We organized Everybody Counts as an event to do that. I worked with the churches. I think there's lots of partners in our community. We're a generous community. We've developed the Fit Closet to help with students in our schools that are homeless. We need to pull that together, identify needs, remove the stigma of asking for help, and give that help. My goal, pretty much my goal in life, is to connect the people that have more than enough with the people that want to, that need it. And I will continue that mission as your commissioner.
Thank you, Aaron. Mark Hattasall.
As I stated before, I was on the Social Service Advisory Board, and I've always been a big supporter of the social services. We talked about on the Facebook Live thing the other night the idea of putting like a dedicated $1 million or something budgeted every year for the social service agencies, and I would be in favor of a number. I don't think it would be necessarily a full mill, but figure out what it was this year, 0.7, 0.75, what it might be, and kind of plan on that. That way the agencies will have some idea of what might be available, and then the Social Service Board would have a target of what number to kind of stay in. And so when they don't really know how much the commission might approve, they don't necessarily know what numbers to offer them. But I think it is one of those things where charity starts at home, and I would like the churches to pick up more of the charity, and it's been nice that the churches are providing meals. Every night of the week you can get a free hot meal here in town, and so that's a good start, and we need to encourage that.
Thank you, Mark. Caleb James.
Yes, so I would be for setting aside a mill every budget session. That's $585,000. That would be about $34,000 more than the city contributed from the general fund this year, and say that that goes to social services every year. Also, what I would like to do is whenever somebody applies for the social services funds, I'd like to do an evaluation of past deficiencies, not only an evaluation but an audit, and see is there another way we can increase efficiency of the services you are providing, and do we have like services where we might join your efforts and increase our efficiency as well, so that the money can reach a greater population, or you can do more with the money that you have. It's not all about just throwing dollars at it, but making sure that those dollars you do put towards it are invested in an efficient program that helps as many people as possible.
Thank you, Caleb. Linda Morse.
I think it is entirely reasonable for our community to set aside a small percent of our total budget for social services, and those are the ones that help the least able to provide for themselves. I'm most familiar with the Crisis Center and the Homeless Shelter and Thrive, but I'm also attend the Common Table meetings for those meals that are at night, because I have a passion for that. I'm not interested in a cap, because I've seen what a tax lid has done to our state, and our cities and counties. I think that we have to be able to respond to a disaster if one comes along. We aren't just floating out here. We have to, and I think that our city processes have done a reasonable job of holding that total amount down. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Maureen Shahan.
The City Commission's role is to ensure that the basic services are provided. We need to make sure that we are funding. I think the Social Services Advisory Board does a good job. I'm not in favor of a firm cap, because we don't know what will happen in the future. We don't know if someone will come up with a really good program that, oh, well, we can't quite fund you because we have a cap and we've already met it this year. So we need flexibility in the ability to fund social services. I think that the services that we're providing now are doing a good job, but I would like to see some increases. But I agree with Caleb that we need to look for efficiencies and ensure that the people getting money are using it wisely.
Thank you, Maureen. Mary Renee Shirk.
I think we should ensure that everything we fund is spending their money wisely, and I wouldn't want us to apply that more to social services than we do to RCPD or anyone else. I would also like to shift this thinking of social services as charity. This is providing services to people in our community who pay taxes. These are the kind of services that enabled my husband and I to raise 4 children and buy a house and now provide a lot of taxes back to this community. So these social services are important. I am not in favor of a cap of any kind, because they serve all of us. They serve all of us. And I don't like the idea that we'd be holding them to a higher standard or holding them to a cap any more, like I said, than we would cap any other service like the police here in town. We do, the churches in this area do a lot of things, and I'm very thankful for Common Table and for all of the food pantries available in town. There are folks who don't want to have to go to churches to get the services they need, and that's where the city comes in, and that's where that money comes in.
Thank you, Mary Brene. Sarah Siders.
I think that the City Commission has an important role in supporting social services, but it's not that we are simply here to fund the entire organization. The city actually doesn't support any organization fully. So no nonprofit is coming to the commission for their full budget, right? So what are we funding social services for? We're doing that because we want to be able to make an investment in our community because we believe in social responsibility. We're doing it because we want to be able to have influence in how that money is being spent and help support and promote accountability at those nonprofit levels. And so we're looking at some of, with the SSAB, we're saying, hey, we think these nonprofits are having some of the biggest impacts here in our community, and we want to continue to support that. That being said, to ensure that they have the proper resources, I think we can be looking at promoting community partnerships, you know, looking at how faith communities are supporting those services as well, and also looking at if there's any you know, duplication of services. We need to make sure that that's not happening to the best of our ability.
Thank you, Sarah. Vincent Tracy.
I get to be the bad guy. I'm in favor of a 1 mil cap, not an additional 1 mil, but 1 mil out of the existing budget. And the reason for that is that gives the Social Services Advisory Board a number to shoot for, and they are the ones who have to determine which one of the social services get how much money. It's not the City Commission. We're not here to fund everything. We're here to help those agencies that are helping us and our citizens to have a better life. But we're not an endless pocket of money. Otherwise, we wouldn't be up here telling you we want to hold down taxes.
Thank you, Vincent. Okay, we're going on to closing statements, and I'm going to go a little out of order. I'm going to let Mark Hattasall go first because he has a prior engagement he needs to get to.
Thank you. As a former mayor and commissioner, I learned quickly on the commission that being a good commissioner isn't a popularity contest. As you look out across the audience some nights and you've got friends on both sides of the aisle and both sides of the issue, it gets kind of queasy pretty quickly there. So as we went through the downtown redevelopment, we had to make a lot of tough decisions, and it wasn't always popular, but I always slept well at night because I knew that I was following what I felt was right. And so people of integrity expect that to be believed when they tell people something, and then they let time prove them right. And I think I did a pretty good job the first time around for 6 years on the commission. I think in retrospect, I wasn't as bad as some of you thought I was. But I think I did a pretty good job, and I think I would do a pretty good job moving forward. I'd appreciate your vote, and thanks for being here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Aaron Estabrook, closing statements.
All right. I want to thank everyone for caring about the future of Manhattan. And there's a full crowd for those listening. There's almost no seats available, and that's great. That shows people do care about the future of our city, and I'm happy you're here on this Sunday afternoon. As I said earlier, my work at Job Corps this last year has inspired me and strengthened my resolve in the station, in the idea that the station you're born into does not dictate the height of your potential. I believe that is what Manhattan represents to a lot of people. For me, as a young boy living on a small hog farm in Southwest Kansas, it was a special event to go to Manhattan. The trees were green. There was excitement and possibility in the air. Manhattan is not a stepping stone to a better place. It is the better place. And as your commissioner, I want to keep that dream alive. I believe we have opportunities in the next decade to strengthen our infrastructure, address our deferred maintenance, and provide quality of place that will last a generation. The next commission is going to need to be fiscally responsible, capable of managing expectations, and not get distracted from the strengths we already have as a city. I'm asking for your vote because I'm willing to do the hard work necessary to make Manhattan stronger.
Thank you, Aaron. Caleb James.
All right, well, I'm asking for your vote so that we can get these property taxes under control, so we can balance the budget and so that you will have a commission that is accountable to you, the people who elected them. One thing that separates me from some of the people running is that I'm not just going to sit here and tell you I'm for something. I'm going to be about what I tell you I'm for. A lot of people mention Northview. I haven't missed a meeting of their group, the Northview Rising Group, in the last 3 months. When they talk to you about affordable housing, the renters together, I haven't missed a meeting. I'm there, and I'm diametrically opposed to some of the ideas that come out of these meetings. But I tell them, I'm willing to hear you. I'm willing to negotiate with you, compromise, and find a ground because I believe that housing should be affordable. Now let's compromise on that path to affordable housing. I agree with you that your neighborhood isn't the safest. That might not be the answer. Let's compromise. Maybe I have to give a little, you have to give a little. I'm willing to do the work. My beautiful wife is in the back, and she watches our small children when I go to these meetings, after she watches them all day while I'm at work, and she's willing to make those sacrifices because we love Manhattan that much. So what I promise you that I will do is continue to attend meetings, continue to hear people, continue to show up for coffee, and continue to be consistent. And I'm asking you not only to vote for me, but after you vote for me, hold me accountable. Write down what I'm telling you I will do. And the moment that I don't, blast me on social media, send me the emails, call WIBW. I don't mind. I will be consistent in what I'm telling you that I will do, and I will make sure that you all are a priority to the commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Caleb James. Linda Morse.
Thank you for coming today, and thank the League and AAUW and
K-Man.
And K-Man for hosting this today. It's important that we hear each other and listen to each other. I am a native Kansan. I've lived here for over 40 years. I raised my husband passed away. I'm a widow. He passed away 20 years ago. I have two grown children, neither of whom stayed. I have been passionate about this community. I have participated in any number of boards, the League Board for a number of years even, the Urban Area Planning Board, lots of boards. I believe I know this community well. I think I would call it I'm intimately familiar with the community. I believe that I have worked hard. I have attended meetings, meeting after meeting, but I have a passion for doing that. I even adopt a few boards because I want to know more about what's happening at the Parks and Rec and the Historic Resources Board, and so Common Table, some of those boards, so I can be closer to the community. And I would like the opportunity to serve another time. I think that I'm just seeking one more term and would like to have the opportunity again. This is important work, and I don't want to leave it to people that are going to just take a knife and whack at it. We've got to have reasonable people in charge of our government.
Thank you, Linda Morse. Maureen Shahan.
Thank you all for being here. I'm Maureen Shahan. I am asking for your vote. I am not a politician. I'm not a public speaker. I tend to be the person in the back handing out the cookies or putting away the chairs. I am a listener. That's my greatest strength, is I listen to people. I synthesize ideas. I listen to what people bring to the table, what they want, and then try to look for ways to make everything work to the best of our ability. I heard one person say, I believe it was a county commissioner, said, this was all a lot easier when I was talking with my coffee buddies. I don't have any illusions that it's easy. I am sure that city commissioners have to disappoint people on a regular basis. It's, what do they say, a good compromise is someone where nobody's happy. A lot of times there's not going to be anybody happy, but the city commission is responsible for a lot of things, and they have to do what's best, they believe best for the community at large. So my goal would be to speak for the people who feel they haven't been spoken for, to consider the needs of the underserved communities, to ensure that the janitors and the secretaries and the people fixing your food are able to live here and to able to live a dignified life in this community. And that will include increasing some services, increasing and maybe decreasing others. But it'll take a lot of balance and a lot of hard work, and I'm not opposed to either of those.
Thank you, Maureen Shahan. Mary Renee Scher.
Thanks for coming out on a sunny afternoon on a beautiful day in Kansas, and we know we don't get many of those, and I do appreciate it. And I'm so happy to see so many people here. I want to make sure that you understand that I'll represent you all, as well as all of those who aren't here. And that's really why I'm running. I'm running for the janitors and the secretaries, the folks who can't make 7 p.m. meetings, the folks who don't have friends in well-connected places, and the folks who do most of the working in this town and most of the tax-paying in this town. I'm a communicator by birth. And what I'm social media savvy and media savvy, and I feel like in this day and age, if a commissioner isn't able to communicate with their constituents, they're not doing their job. And so I vow to communicate with you more, to go to more meetings, but to also be on social media more, be available more by email, be available more in different places so that I can hear about people and how they're getting along and how they're dealing with the taxes and are they willing to pay a little more to get a better sidewalk or to get a bus stop in front of their house. I initially started running partly because the Attabus needs benches at the bus stops. And I realize it's one of those little things that we think about. Other people say, I want the fireworks to come back, or I want the pool to stay open later. And I think sometimes in these forums, we focus on these really big issues, and we forget that for a lot of people who love Manhattan, it's really about the little things. It's about sidewalks in front of their houses. It's about making sure if they need an outfit, they can go to their career closet and get one. It's also about having a realistic vision of what Manhattan is. I'm going to give you a heads up. College students don't have money anymore. We can't count on them as an economic base. And when they graduate, they've got a lot of student loans. They're not buying houses. The military has changed in 20 years. There's not a lot of them here. So we need to focus on who is here, who is paying taxes, and what we need for the future. I want to represent all of you and your friends and neighbors who aren't here as well.
Thank you, Mary Renee. Sarah Siders.
Like everyone else, I am grateful for your presence here and thankful for your commitment and investment in our city. I'm running for city commission at this exact moment because I believe this is a pivotal time in our city's history. I think that we are making strategic and critical decisions for the future of our city, not even for one generation, but for multiple generations to come. And I think we're really at a hinge point. We need to have certain leadership that is thoughtful and decisive and that has a vision for the city that goes beyond even just the things that we're talking about right now that matter to us right now, things like the levy, things like the parking garage. Those are physical manifestations of our investment in the city. But we want to be thinking about the kind of city that we want for our grandkids. Would our grandkids stay here, right? Would our great-great-grandkids be here? And so that's the kind of city and the kind of sustainability and longevity that I'm wanting to build. I think we have a unique opportunity here in Manhattan because we can't expand infinitely out to the east and west and north and south. We have these barriers with the sound barrier from Fort Riley and the rivers. And I think that actually makes us sort of this boutique town where we can say, what kind of town do we want to be? What kind of city do we want to be? Who are we? The people that are here, as Mary Renee always talks about, who are we as a community and what kind of city do we want to build for the future? And I think that strategic growth promotes sustainability. We don't want to just say, hey, we want everyone and we'll take anyone we can get. We want to say, hey, do you fit our vision? Do you fit who we are as a city? Because we are a great, great city. And we want to invite specifically the kinds of people that we want. And I think that does involve attracting and retaining our young professionals, knowing who they are and what they want, and attracting and supporting our current businesses and the other businesses who might call Manhattan home.
Thank you, Sarah. Vincent Tracy.
I've been known in the last 40 years for if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And I do it because it's the right thing to do, not because it's going to make somebody happy or make a special interest group feel better. It's the right thing for the citizens especially. I'm not here to represent individuals. I'm here to represent the whole city. And I'd appreciate if you would vote for me so that we can keep our property taxes as something we can afford and that we can provide those services that are needed, not just the ones that are wanted. And more importantly, I'd ask you, if you haven't already registered to vote, do so. Your voice won't count if you don't go into that ballot booth and cast your vote. Thank you for being here this evening.
Thank you, Vincent. So I want to thank all of our candidates for being here today and answering all of our questions, and thank the audience for coming. We do have a great audience here, and thank you to our K-Man listeners as well. I want to let everyone know that the League has a website called vote411.org, where it has various issues and such that many or all of these candidates have said what their positions are on. So if you want to go to vote411.org, you can find out more about these candidates' positions on issues that may be important to you. And I also encourage you to visit the League of Women Voters of Manhattan Riley County website. And if you'd like to take a fun quiz about voting and the 19th Amendment, which is celebrating its centennial this next year, you can take a fun little quiz on the League's Facebook and Twitter pages. So for now, we will take about a 13-minute break, and we will be back and ready for the school board session starting at 3:45. Thank you.
And we have completed now at the League of Women Voters annual candidate forum here for Manhattan City Commissioner candidates. We have concluded that portion of the day and took nearly 2 hours as 8 candidates had an opportunity to present their positions and talk a bit about why they wish to serve the community. We're going to take a break for some commercial matter and also for some news and weather information with Stephen Shaver back at the KMAN studio. And when we come back around 3:45 or so here on News Radio KMAN, the second segment of today's Candidates Forum will be featuring candidates from the USD 383 school board positions. I'm Dave Lewis. We're live at the Manhattan Public Library. We're carrying this live on News Radio KMAN and online as well at newsradiokman.com. Back with the League of Women Voters Candidates Forum at the Manhattan Public Library after these messages on News Radio KMAN.